The company 0x4447 builds products to increase standardization and security in AWS organizations. And they do this with automated pipelines that use well-structured projects to create secure, easy-to-maintain, and fail-tolerant solutions. One of those is their VPN product, built on top of the popular OpenVPN project, which has no license restrictions. You're only limited by the network card in the instance. To learn more, visit snark.cloud/deploy-and-go. That's snark.cloud/deploy-and-go, all one word. Usually when I talk about AWS regions and availability zones, it ties back to data transfer pricing or some other model of cloud economics. Today, I want to take a different angle. It's my belief that how I think about AWS regions and how AWS talks about them are somewhat far apart. The reason I'm doing this in podcast form instead of as a Twitter stunt or whatnot is that I'm not particularly intending this to be funny, and to be transparent, I'm not completely sure whether I'm right or not. Let's dive in. AWS talks about regions a lot. On their global infrastructure page, they lay out what a region is. They periodically announce regional expansions of services and features. Admittedly, it's often hard to tell the difference between the two, where AWS is concerned, as if they were completely new offerings, rather than just being offered a new location. Recently, I found myself thinking about regions in a couple of different ways. The first incident that brought the topic to mind was my last tweet in AWS Twitter thread client, at lasttweetinaws.com. The thing is completely stateless, and while it works super quickly from US West 2 in Oregon for me here in San Francisco, folks reported that the further away you got, the more degraded the experience was due to latency. Aha, said I. Since it's completely stateless, aside from a couple of secrets provisioned at deploy time, I could deploy it to every AWS region at once and just add the resulting APIs gateway to a Route 53 latency routed record. Boom, done. Unfortunately, every solutions architect I approached to ask about the best way to proceed to do this looked at me as if I'd lost my mind entirely. It turns out that just because AWS has, at the time that I record this, 26 launched regions, it doesn't mean that AWS envisions any given customer or workload using more than a small handful of them at once. The idea of deploying something to every region just isn't a part of their model. While I could do deployments via code build in series, it would take hours, or via some kind of step function state machine, I would need to be at least 4 times smarter than I am, there's absolutely nothing out of the box that lets me cross into other regions natively to do deployments. This is pretty clearly a derivative of the AWS design principle that keeps regions as separate entities, so an outage in one ideally doesn't carry over into other regions. The second thing that impacted my perception of regions was a tweet from Colm McCarthy that said, not to give away our super secret strategy, but something that people often underappreciate about AWS is that new regions are by far the biggest needle mover for our business. The speed of light, sovereignty, and data locality all matter. While obviously there's a significant business benefit derived from region buildouts, otherwise AWS would, you know, not build more of them, it hadn't occurred to me that it would be such a significant driver of growth for AWS's business. To my mind, the benefits of a new region opening distill down to data residency requirements for customers in that country who can't have data leave the country, and decreased latency for applications hosted in that region to customers located near it. It hadn't really occurred to me that it unlocked the cloud for completely new swaths of customers. And something about that didn't sit quite right to me, so I did some thinking.
This episode is sponsored in part by our friends at Vultr, spelled V-U-L-T-R, because they're all about helping save money, including on things like, you know, vowels. So what they do is they are a cloud provider that provides surprisingly high performance cloud compute at a price that, well, sure, they claim it is better than AWS's pricing, and when they say that, they mean that it's less money. Sure, I don't dispute that, but what I find interesting is that it's predictable. They tell you in advance on a monthly basis what it's going to cost. They have a bunch of advanced networking features. They have 19 global locations and scale things elastically, not to be confused with openly, which is apparently elastic and open. They can mean the same thing sometimes. They have had over 1 million users. Deployments take less than 60 seconds across 12 pre-selected operating systems, or if you're one of those nutters like me, you can bring your own ISO and install basically any operating system you want. Starting with pricing as low as $2.50 a month for Vulture Cloud Compute, they have plans for developers and businesses of all sizes, except maybe Amazon, who stubbornly insists on having something of the scale on their own. But you don't have to take my word for it, with an exclusive offer for you. Sign up today for free and receive $100 in credits to kick the tires and see for yourself. Get started at vulture.com/morningbrief. That's VULTR.com/morningbrief.
If you take a look at AWS's regional services list, it purports to show what services are available in a given region. This doesn't help you choose a region based upon service maturity, since you'd have to select a region, scroll for days to check a service, then repeat that for a second region. The way it used to look and function was far better. Fortunately, Trek 10's interns, no, I'm not kidding about that, were able to recreate it at awsservices.info. This lets you show how many services are available in other regions at the same time, all on one page. The interesting bit to me about this is that your experience in a relatively mainstream region, such as Virginia and/or Oregon, is going to be wildly different than the service coverage in Bahrain. What's worse is that, as the webpage states, note, just because a service is listed as being available in a region does not mean that every part or every feature of a service is available in that region. If a service gets a feature or capability, that's not enough for you if you're in a non-primary region. You've got to wait for that feature to make it all the way to the region that you're using, and there's no good way to figure out what features have made it your way without checking on all of them independently. As a result, I'm starting to realize that using non-primary AWS regions is effectively like using a different cloud provider in some respects. It's usually more expensive, the capabilities are diminished, and while in theory you have better insight into what's coming your way, in practice, you're not guaranteed anything resembling a timeline. Heck, Amazon Kendra was released years ago and is still not available in the Northern California AWS region. All of this serves to reinforce what I once considered to be a throwaway line, but I'm starting to realize is more insightful than perhaps I gave it credit for being. Specifically, if you're planning to go multi-cloud, first go multi-region and see if you might learn something. It's harder than it looks, you'll find very hard to predict service differences between regions, and you'll undoubtedly learn an awful lot about your workload's dependencies as you go through the process. This isn't intended to be overly cynical or suggest that AWS is doing anything that they shouldn't be doing. Instead, my purpose behind this podcast is to, I guess, air the thought that I have that really hadn't occurred to me just because I haven't tried to deploy things to so many regions previously. Hopefully it resonates with other people out there. If not, let me know and I'll begin working on an apology.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.